We're so happy to be here today and be able to perform for you. It's such an honor. Thank you. Oh, and by the way, it's just going to be 5 minutes, 2 songs.
Okay, the first song is, this is my favorite opera melody, and I was listening to it every day when I was a child. And I could send you an MP3, but you have the real opera performing that beautiful melody.
Okay, I hope you're enjoying it. It's a Puccini aria.
Thank you. It was really, really beautiful music. It was, oh, it was so beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you.
To do it again. Okay. We're lucky to have so many great musicians. So we just finished a small section about why. No, we have to do a mandala. Jeff Eddy wants to do it. We just got through the section, a beautiful section. Pabongkor Rinpoche had asked, he had said, who can see into people's minds? Oh, I think it's a little too hot in here, right? Is it too hot? Yeah, they're going to fall asleep faster. Pabongkor Rinpoche had said, you know, who has the capacity to really help people? Because, you know, and we spoke about the example of a physician, a doctor, who could see all your future, who could look into your future before they prescribed your medicine. So they know what's going to happen to you in a week, and in 3 weeks, and 10,000 weeks, and 10,000 years. And then how would their capacity be to prescribe for you the right thing? You see what I mean? And then Pabongkor Rinpoche had said, well, if you were really committed to helping other people, what's helping other people mean? Basically helping them make themselves happy, right? And what's the best qualification for that? You have to be happy, okay? Basically, I mean, if you're selling anything, you have to have tried it, right? And I mean, the best qualification for teaching happiness is that you're happy. You know that. So then he said, well, how can you really help a lot of people to become happy? Oh, you should be able to read their minds and see their futures and see what's going to happen for years out. Many thousands of years out. And then he said, well, who has that capacity? And the answer is, we all have that capacity. Okay? We all have that capacity. We are in a very, very odd moment of our evolution in this world. We are possessed of the capacity to see all things. And we are possessed of the capacity to appear in all worlds. and to assist the beings living there. And that capacity is temporarily blocked. Okay? So we're in a weird, this world is in a weird evolutionary stage. There are teachings here which are compelling and, you know, reasonable, which state that you have that capacity and it's blocked. And yet we're still blocked. You see what I mean? Like, most people in most worlds never heard that they had the capacity, or they already developed the capacity and released the capacity. But we're in this strange, we're neither here nor there, right? We're like half and half, you know? We heard we have that capacity, but we haven't opened that capacity. There are people in our world who have reached that capacity and who indicate that we could have that capacity. But then most of us haven't realized that capacity yet. So we're in a very strange evolutionary place. So Pabongkwa Bhiche says, could you develop that capacity? You see, how would you release that capacity? And then he said, you are in a situation already. You have the ability to release that capacity because you were born of a human woman. Because you were born from the womb of a human woman. And you possess the six elements. And then we talked about that. When was that? Last time. And it was a beautiful thing. He said six elements. He didn't explain them. So we went to, actually we went to a tantric text, okay? Don't tell anybody, all right? And they spoke about how a body which is born from the womb of a human woman is hardwired. It has the structural framework, the foundation, which could support the form of an angel. Okay? Your physical body now has an inner foundation or framework which is uniquely capable of sustaining the body of an angel. Okay? So you already have half the work is finished. Only people born of a human woman womb have the six elements required to sustain the body of an angel. Without flesh. You see what I mean? And you have it. So even from a physical point of view, forget meditation or study or... You see, even from a physical point of view, you already have the physical foundation upon which an angelic body is based. Okay? And so he went through that. And that's where we stopped. Okay? Sangye Drupe Thakni Tepa Chenpa Che Yinla, then you just need the instructions on how to build that body, right? That's all you need. You just need reasonable instructions. And it's not any more mystical than that, okay? You just get the instructions, you carry out about half of them, and you can do it, you know? It's not like some mystical thing has to happen. It's not. The lawn room is very, straightforward. It's just a lawnmower manual. It's a fancy lawnmower manual. You know? And you plod along and do each thing in order. Swami Shivananda called it jackass persistence. You just plod along, you know? And the guy whips you on the right side and you go, you turn left, you know? And you just keep going, you know? And you don't have to understand too much. And you just do what they tell you to do when they say to do it. And then you get enlightened, you know? So, that's all. Sanlama Norwen Tembe Nimbo Jegyawa Nipe Tomasunjel Kitemba Chima Mepa Ditabutami Jel. So there have been lots of people born from mothers, human mothers' wombs. But they didn't have the instructions. To have the karma, to have the instructions available in your world in a pure and complete form is extremely rare. We're spoiled because we have Google and most of you have had Dharma for as long as you wanted. You've grown up in the classes, It's been available since Ken Rinpoche came. That's 1972, and in our immediate lineage. So you've always had it around, but it's very rare. It's very, very rare. And it's hard for you to imagine. First, imagine that it never happened, or he never got here. He was shot at countless times. He was bombed. He was chased by three separate Chinese armies over the Himalayas, and he made it. And he was sick countless times, and he was almost blinded in the snow. He had problems with his eyes his whole life from that. But he made it. And it was so tenuous, right? It could have never happened. And this would not be happening, And then, it's not that you have a certain lineage of instruction on how to become an angel. You have the complete instructions. Like, he lived long enough to pass on all of the instructions, And you have all of them. There's nothing you don't have. Dona Rangi Matsumba Kone Lupa Mato Gelgen Tamje Dondo. But for the fact that we have deceived ourselves. What's the definition of a pramana? In Tibetan language, please. Sadamilui Rigpa. Semi semi. Say Sadhu. Milui Rigpa. Lua means not deceived, not drunk, not crazy, not overcome with jealousy. Anything you perceive with your own eyes, if you are not drunk, not crazy, not on acid, or whatever it is nowadays. Somebody said iron or something like that? Steel. I don't know. Anyway, it's a new meth or something. But here's the word lupa used in a different context. He says, Rangi lupa mato. What's rangi lupa? Rangi lupa. Yeah. Unless you cheat yourself out of it, you can't help but get enlightened. Unless you get in the way, you're going to get enlightened. That's kind of depressing. Gyokyen tamje dandra. There's nothing stopping you. Chunkyen tamje tsang. You have everything you need. Ditabutan samu tok tu minuna. If you can't get there now, chine dile samwe ten dan chun minjol nyepayin. It's certain that you will never find this kind of chance again. This is unique. The combination of a body which is already half angel, and a teaching which is complete and pure. And you're young and you're free and you have money and you can eat and you have everything. You have everything. It's not going to get better. If you can't do it now, then it's hopeless. Because you're not going to get a better chance later. It won't happen. Rangchak gashiki tengsang nipe du. I love these lines. I remember these lines from when I was, 20. I love these lines. Rangchak gashiki. Some people say these are the days of dark. Dutu nyambare sem. They say these are the bad times. But frankly speaking, in the countless billions of lives you have lived up to now. You never had a more golden times than these. These are the golden days. You never had a chance like this. These are not dark days in the world, you know. These are not days of pestilence and war and famine, you know. You never had a better chance in billions of lifetimes. And you ain't gonna have a better chance in the billions of lifetimes ahead. These are the best days you ever saw. Okay? And they are. You can feel it, right? These are exciting times. These are very beautiful times. You can feel it in this room. Yeah? Okay. So we gotta do anything we can to get enlightened now. Okay? We're not gonna have a better chance later. Okay? It can only get worse. And we never had such a good chance before. This is the right time to get it done. Dena chedu chawa semchen tanje ki dundu topcha lana mebe zope chanchu de daki chine kyan topa chawo. Therefore, for the sake of somebody else, he says chedu chawa, okay? Very beautiful Tibetan word. For the sake of someone else, chedu chawa. Who? Semchen tanje, every living creature. Not just in this world, but the countless billions of worlds that you cannot see. For them, dundu lanamepe zope chanchu, perfect, matchless, totally complete enlightenment. Daki chine kyan. I'm gonna do it. Topacha. I'm doing it. Now, chanjuki sengi mikpanam senda. He says, now at the beginning of the teaching, before we even start the teaching, try to bring up in your mind that you're gonna do it now. Okay? You're gonna do it now. You can do it now. You're gonna get enlightened now. And you can. These are really strange times in the world. The things in the Middle East and things happening in Asia. We travel maybe more than anybody. I mean, people like Obama don't see as much of the world as we do. We're traveling constantly. To every major continent, you know, we see everything, politically and geographically and historically, and it's a beautiful time. It's a very exciting time. There's magic happening. The U.S. newspaper people and the TV people, they don't see what we see. They don't go there, and we see there are people like you everywhere now. Everywhere, every little city, there's people like you. There's big, huge groups of people like you. There's bigger groups than you. You know, there's places like there are thousands of people like you. Just like you, you know. And they are hot to practice and they're all turned on and they're all excited and everywhere. We've been invited to 80, there's like 70 or 80 countries. That's weird. You know, and it's happening. You, it's a beautiful thing. These are the age of Aquarius. Okay, alright. It's cool. It's happening. It really is happening. Thank you, Sam Kippe. Okay, I can't sing like her, I know. Thank you, Chairman Lang. This is what it means to Kunlong Chupa. Okay, we've been talking all week about Kunlong Chupa. How do you walk into a teaching? And how do you walk into the bathroom to brush your teeth? Okay, how should you think about... He says, ask yourself a question. Say, why am I doing this? Okay, please, if the only thing you get out of this week... Okay, if the only thing you get out of this week is the occasional habit to ask yourself, why am I doing what I'm doing right now? Okay, that's all. And the answer, what did we say about the answer? It doesn't have to be right. There's no right answer, you know? What's the most common answer? Because I feel like it. You know, like, what's your motivation for meditating today? And you just say, I feel like it. And if there comes a day when I don't feel like it, I'll probably skip. You know? And that's the way it is. And then you just follow your motivation. You say, okay, So you feel like it. Well, you know, how many days are you going to meditate this week? You say 4. And then, okay, well, how many would that make in a month? 16. How many months can you do that? 12. No, I mean, how many months total can you do that? I don't know. Well, how old are you? And then you say X years old. And they say, well, how many years you got left? And then you subtract from 70, right? As if you had 70. Right? As if you knew you had 70. Or 7 hours. You don't know. Right? So then you subtract and you say, I have this many years left. And then you're, in this system, you're supposed to say, well, what after that? What's going to happen after that? And then you're supposed to follow the logic until you reach your death. And then think about what will happen then, and then plan for that, and then think about helping others to do that. And then you come back to a real motivation. That's all. Do you still brush your teeth? Hopefully. Okay, all right? You still brush your teeth. You don't change what you're doing, okay? You just do it for deeper reasons now, okay? That's all. And they make you happier. They make you a happier person, all right? Okay. You still do the same things you did before, probably. When this line of thinking becomes automatic, you are a bodhisattva. When this line of thinking becomes automatic, you are a bodhisattva. Okay? What's automatic? Somebody invites you to go sit in the garden tomorrow at dusk, and they bring Thai food. And they bring a big Thai iced tea. And you look at that and you look at the tofu and then you ask yourself, am I going to eat and drink that? And then you say, like, I could probably eat most of the food, but the iced tea, I don't know. And then you say, why would you eat it? You see, you just get in the habit of saying why. Why would you eat that? And then you're supposed to go off on a long exploration of your motivation. And you don't try to correct it. You just flow with it. And it brings you around to thinking about, sooner or later, all logical, what do you call it, speculation about your future of your life. Well, now, I curse you, okay? It will come around to thinking about how you're going to save the world, okay? I curse you. Okay, you can't even have a Thai iced tea without considering how it might help you save the world. Okay, and it will. It's fine. Okay, then you come back to, that's how I'm going to save the world. And that process, I curse you, it will become automatic. You will not be able to enjoy anything without thinking about it. And then you will enjoy the thing more. Okay, you go to a movie and sit down before the trailer starts. Okay, get there a little early. And take your mind on the why you're there thing, and then by the time you watch the movie, it's a tantric experience, okay? It's a tantric experience. Something amazing happens in the movie. Maybe you reach heaven by the time the credits start. Seriously, okay? Not kidding. Not kidding. But you learn to run your mind through that thought, what do you call it? Train of thought. Before you do anything, and then you're a bodhisattva. That's what makes you a bodhisattva. That's enough to call you a bodhisattva. It's cool, right?
Yes.
It's pretty easy. Okay. Deitabe sangeke gobanda topala de dukkha. And if you hope to become enlightened, you must be able to go through this train of thought quickly before you do anything. Any activity. Okay? De dupala dutu shigar. Now we need somebody, okay, give me the instructions. Okay, I'm all ready. I got the motivation thing down. Finally, Mr. Pabonka, you know, can we get to the book? Okay, he says, okay, now you're ready for the instructions. Shigur. Demi shena chije dube wembe nesu songyang ngak da dung. If you don't have some clear instructions on how to become an enlightened angel, then okay, you can go out in the middle of the desert and you can do tantra. You can recite tantric mantras, okay? And you can go. He says, Nakda, those of you who know Tibetan, if you want to know a cute colloquialism, okay? Nakda-dung, okay? Nakda-dung means to count mantras. Nak means mantra, right? Nakda-dung means count mantras. Nakda-dung means you can go count those mantras. Okay, you add the word da, which means similar. But in colloquial it means, yeah, you can go. You can go count your mantras, you know. Manlan dan dat, you can go say your prayers. Yangna semne tembo re tsam gombale. And you can reach those levels of meditation that I was talking about, that I'm going to talk about. 9 levels, right? So you can, yeah, you can do. Chiyan che mi shepa. And you don't know anything. You won't know anything. Jungwa yin. You won't be able to get anywhere. Okay? If you don't know the basic steps, you won't get anywhere. Chu dutsu shepa la, tsangla man noe dhamma, shigla lob gobe. In order to get enlightened, you have to know the way. You have to be taught a good, clear system to get enlightened. Okay? To get a good, clear system, you should have one which is authentic and which is, what do you call it? Manorwa means there's no se. Se means adulterated. Okay. Somebody thought it would be cute to add to an omniscient being's teaching. Okay? And you add one guy per generation, that we're 47 generations out on Vajrayogini, so then you got about half the teaching is corrupt. Okay? Like that. Gope. Detabe dhamma ki gyabu tabu ni chanju langi rinpa dini yinpa dukpe. De chere dhaki chanju langi rinpa di lepa nyene nyamsu ne nyamba kunlong ke gun. You have before you a beautiful, compelling, authentic, effective teaching on each spiritual step you need to take to get to enlightenment, the fastest way you can. All you have to do is try. From your side, all you have to do is try. The instructions are good. The instructions are complete, and many people have used them and achieved their goals. You just have to try them. Okay? Then good. Dena chir kunon chepa di kangdiyang gor ne cheshing. Therefore, no matter what activity you undertake during the day, the first thing you should do is ask yourself why. And then take yourself through this train of thought, okay? Neche. Neche means marma, maha marma. Okay? Extremely crucial. Okay? Lakpa chaju langi rinpe chi nyemba na kuno nyang kam chum ki mi chokpar. If you sit down and listen to this book without a good motivation, without examining why you're here, it won't work. It won't work on you. Okay? You have to approach. These are correct steps that will make you enlightened. If all you have to do is hear them and go to Prescott and practice them, and you will get where you want to go. You can save whole planets. But if you don't approach the teaching with the right motivation, it won't work on you. Okay? So he says, well, what's the right motivation? He says, Chanchu Gisem, which is what? Bodhicitta, you know, the desire to save the world. Then he gets you some slack. Okay, he says, Chuma Tsunche. Chimba tsunche. Chimba means, look, if you can't feel like a bodhisattva all the time, just fake it. Okay? Right? He says, just fake it. That's good enough to start. As we start this text, as we start off on the steps to Buddhahood, if you can't sit down here and seriously say, I'm here because I want to save the world, then say, I'm here because I would like to wish I was saving the world. And he says, that's good enough. Okay. That's good enough to start. Okay, it's called chuma. Say chuma. Chuma means faith. Okay, I learned my Tibetan not from a dictionary. I learned it from a living being, and then I stuck to him. He didn't want me around, and I stuck to him like glue. And then I got to be his cook. Then I got to be his dishwasher. Then I moved up to driver, and. So I kept asking him questions all the time. So the way I learned chuma, we stopped in the Howard Johnson's outside the Delaware Bridge one day. And we went in, and he had a Tibetan tea. And he said, do you have cream? And they said, no. And I said, well, he'll take creamer. And he says, what's creamer? I said, well, it's, you know. And I, you know those little bucket things in your pocket? I said, see, it's just like cream, you know? And he goes, chuma. I said, what's chuma mean? He says, that's chuma. You know, that's fake. That's fake cream. It's not cream. You know? And he goes, then I had to go buy some cream next door. Shinkope. Shinkope. Deyan, semge ge nyam nyong yopa nam la. Ma sem chen tan je ki dun du she sok tsik nyungu sel tat gyang chok mu. If you've had a lot of training, if you've been practicing gun long chupa, I'm sure by August you will be like that. Okay? The reason we're doing 10 days of teaching in Phoenix and then we take 2 or 3 months off is that you get yourself ready for the retreat. So you're going to review this material over and over. The free downloads, you will listen to again and again. And you will practice Kunlong Chupa, right? That's the most important thing. In my heart, I beg you to do that. You will become a different person. You'll become like Mahatma Gandhi or something, okay? All you need to do before you sit down to anything, say, why am I doing this? Okay? If you're with your friends from this teaching in the next few months, when you go out together, right? To say to you or something, you know? And you sit down at a table and you say, what did Geshe Michael say was the one thing he wanted us to remember? And you say, I don't remember. And you'll say, no, we were supposed to ask, why am I doing this? Okay? Why am I doing this right now? And then you were supposed to let your mind wander around until you wanted to save the world. Somehow, from I feel like it, the mind goes to I'm saving the world, and then you sit down and have dinner. If the activity is not different, the activity doesn't change. You question why you're there. You raise the level of your intention, and then you eat. And you're not required to have any certain intention, okay? Like, I go to yoga classes, and not of course, Jenny's, but... no, I go to yoga classes, and she's going, oh, and then they say... You know, do it for the 3 members of your family. And I'm like, can't we just do yoga? You know, it's hard for me to think about my brother and do down dog. You know, and they're not saying that. They're not imposing on you some charitable motivation. They're not saying that. They're saying, before you do yoga, ask yourself, why did I come here? And then you'll say, I want to get thinner. I have a sore neck. There's cute girls at this yoga studio. You know, like that. And then you can say, well, how long will your neck stay fixed if you go to yoga? And you'll say, I don't know. It's been good for a month. And they say, well, how many months do you have left? You say, what kind of question is that? What do you mean how many months I have left? How many months are you going to do yoga? I don't know, I have a 3-month package. You know? And then they say, no, you don't understand. You know? How many 3-month packages can you get by on before you can't go into down dog anymore? You can't hold yourself up into down dog anymore. How many months before that? And then you say, I don't know, 90 months or maybe more, right? Call it 100 months or 200 months. There's a number, right? And then ask yourself, oh, just be innocent, okay? Don't push. Don't push your mind. Just ask gently, you know, civilly. You know, okay, where will your last Dharma Dog be? Which studio? You say, maybe here, you know. And then where? Then what? Well, I'll go home and I'll probably just watch TV, you know. But then what happens the day you can't get up to turn the television on? I don't know, I'll probably just read or something. You know, and then you say, but what if you can't read anymore? You know, your eyes get too bad, you can't read anymore. Even with the worst glasses you can buy, you can't read anymore. Then what are you going to do? I don't know, I had a grandmother like that, she just sort of slipped away eventually. They get sad and they slip away. And then what? You see, don't let your mind rest. Don't let your mind stop. Say, then what? Well, then I don't know, some dark place. I don't know. I don't know exactly. Who knows? Then you say, well, what can you reasonably expect given how you've been treating people? You know? What kind of seeds do you have in your mind? If your mind right now was to throw forth a new world and you were to walk into that world, what would it be like? Just be reasonable with your mind. Don't lecture your mind, you see? Don't say, you should be thinking about others. Don't say that. Just say, you know, reasonably, can you expect, like, how many meals have you given away in the last year? And if that's the only way to get a meal, how many meals can you expect in this new world that we're going to be making? And then you say, well, I don't know, actually, I was too busy this year to give away any meals, you know. Oh, okay, so the new world's going to be, like, hungry. And then you just follow the logic, you know. And then you say, well, what's going to happen to your brother and your sister? How are they going to die? You say, I don't know, they'll just die like everybody else. Well, what's going to happen to them afterwards? I don't know, they don't practice at all, they're not interested. They're just collecting cars and houses and kids and... You know, well, then what kind of seeds are they going to have to throw a new world in front of them? And you say, they don't have any that I know of. Well, then, are you just going to let them be? Are you going to, would you let that happen to them with no warning? And then you say, well, you want me to proselytize to my brother and sister? You know, you got to have a picture of the Dalai Lama or you're not cool, you know. And then, no, not like that. If someone expresses interest, if someone begins to think about death, if someone shows the least inkling that they might die someday and they might go somewhere, then yeah, talk to them. You can always say, I heard a guy say. You don't have to say, I believe it. I heard this weird guy. And then you start talking about it. When you start talking about death, people get interested, okay? We were in a place called, we were near Zhuhai, which is near Macau. And we gave a talk there a couple of years ago. And I was late. The lady driving me got lost. It was quite scary. She went the wrong way down the highway to Hong Kong. And, I mean, against the traffic. And then we were really late. And it was our last night in China on that tour. And Ben and Gami and Ravaho covered. They got up and talked, and it was great. They did a great job. And then when I got there, there was like half an hour left, and I talked for a little bit. And then it was all business executives, you know. And then some guy asked me, what happens when you die? You know, like, we're not supposed to talk about that stuff. We're supposed to talk about profits and, you know. I'm like, then I thought, well, what the heck. We're leaving tonight, you know. We're like 45 minutes from the border. And I said, I went off on what happens when you die. And they were so turned on, this huge group of business people. And they were like, they were so, so happy. And they were so, so relieved that someone would talk about it. Because everyone knows they're going to die. And no one ever talks about it, you know. And then if somebody gets up with a half-decent, convincing story about the seed thing throwing a world in front of you, when you just got finished talking about a seed thing to throw a better corporate life in front of you, they're ready for it. And they were so grateful. People are so grateful for any kind of guidance about an unknown thing. So share it with them. When the time is appropriate. We're not allowed to proselytize. The reason we do mandala before class is that I'm not allowed to teach unless you ask. If you don't do the mandala thing, I'm not supposed to teach. So you share with them, think about helping people. What was our example? Were you brushing your teeth? Or, I forget. Oh, yeah, why are we going into yoga class? Think all these thoughts, come back to the yoga class, come to the front of your mat, take Tadasana, and your motivation is already fixed. Your motivation is already high. What do you call it? Elevated. Okay. Why? It's not that you fought your mind and you decided to think about your parents' benefit or something like that. You took your mind to your own death. And you went past that. And then you doubled back to think about the people on either side of you. And then you came back to the front of your mat. That's all. And your mind will be elevated already. Okay? And then if you do that before you do anything, your mind is in a heightened spiritual state all day. If you just think before you do anything, why are you doing it? That's all. Just think, why am I doing this? I'm not asking you to do anything different, right? All right? That's clear, right? Still you should go to yoga class. Still you should brush your teeth, you know? Do what you do already. But make that motivation. Take your mind to what will happen if I repeat this activity indefinitely. You will die. And then what will happen? Depends on what you've been doing to other people. Well, how does that impact on the people you love? Trouble. Then come back to the class and start the class. You see? Don't do anything different. The mind is already in a high spiritual state. Got it? It's very beautiful. Where were you? Oh, yeah. So what he's saying is that if you have a lot of practice asking yourself, why am I doing this thing right now? If you have a lot of practice doing it, and then you walk into our class, are you still hot? You okay? Okay. Then you walk, it's this light. Then you walk into a class, and they go, Sashi, Puki, Jikshi, right? Then your mind goes off. You know, if you have training, the minute they start the Sashi Puki, your mind is to your death, and to your parents' death, and to your brother and sister's death, and your mind is already back to the class, ready, with a high motivation. You see what I mean? Those words are enough to trigger. Yingyur mitumba. You see that one? Yingyur mitumba. Is it okay? Are we on there? It should be the second line. Yeah. Yingyur mitumba. But if you're a beginner in this practice, right? If you're a beginner in this practice of kunlong chupa, bringing your mind to a heightened state before you start anything, then he says, it's not going to be enough to trigger it just by saying Sashi, Poki, Joshi. Okay? It's not going to be enough. Dengjo Dunche Nyeka Ne Tsamde Rimshin Seltab Na Chanchuki Semki Mignam La Yingyur Tun Om. You're going to have to go through this whole process. What whole process? Why did you come here? I wanted cookies. I heard there was a bake sale. Okay. How many cookies can you eat in your life? About 1,000,000. What will happen after the 1,000,000th cookie? I'll die. What happens after that? Who knows? What could happen if the seeds of how you treated others in this life threw ahead of you an entire world? I don't know. I mean, I'm not mean to people, but I'm not particularly interested. I mean, I don't, you know, go out of my way. Well, then, multiply that times 1,000 and that's what you'll get. And then, what kind of preparations have your friends made for their death? I don't know. What kind of preparation can you make? Who knows? So then, basically, what you have is you and all your friends being thrown off a cliff into a new world, you know, created by watching television, or I don't know, nothing more. You see what I mean? Huge masses of unprepared, innocent people being thrown off cliffs. And then bring your mind back, and then start the class, okay? Like that. He says, bring your mind around, and then start your yoga class or whatever you're going to start, okay? Sugnyo sotabma, leitambuwati sangyayam sansyata. Deyan lamrim tsamma se, rang re riwo gen denpa namki wang long chi so kang chena ang, ngundo kun long chukab, kibusum gi langge rimbam shat sangma re jungwadam. He says, it is a unique practice. It is a secret, unique practice to the Ryo Gendembas. Do you see that word there? Ryo Gendemba?
Yeah.
What's a Ryo Gendemba? What's Ri? Ri, Ri means Shang Mountain, right? Ri means Shang Mountain. Ryo means the mountain. Gendenba is an old word for Galupa. Okay? Rivo Gendenba means the mountain Galupas. Galupa is a tradition that was started by Jetsokapa around 1400, and which has continued down through his student, who was the first Dalai Lama, down to the present day. So we are Rivo Gendenba. Okay? We are of that lineage, okay? He said, in the Ryo... By the way, why is it called mountain? Jetsokapa's headquarters was Ganden Monastery, which he built. He and his disciples built. How much money did they have when they started? $7. So, tonight when I ask you to build a community center in Phoenix, it's going to be much easier. They had $7. They all reached into their pockets, they pulled out all the coins, and they all threw them on the table, and it was $7. And they started on the side of a mountain. And now that monastery, I mean, at its peak, it had 10,000 monks. And it was beautiful. And that was the headquarters of the Galupa. And that's called Ryo Gendenba. In the Cultural Revolution, it was destroyed, block by block. There was not a single block left. And then some buildings have been rebuilt. I think there's maybe 50 or 100 monks there now. I don't know. Okay. Anyway, Ryo Gendenba Namgi, our unique practice, one of our high secret unique practices of our lineage. And you should be proud of your lineage, okay? It's not sectarian, okay? It's like, I'm some copier. Okay? And before we do anything, he says, we sit down and we ask, why are you doing that? To whom? Ourselves. Okay? That's why it's secret, probably. Okay. You don't ask Ritesh, you know, Akash, you don't say, well, why are you here? You know, you say, you ask Geshe Michael, why are you here? And then you say, I just wanted to be here, you know, and okay. It's beautiful, though. He says, Kadam sanyingi tembe keche lanamepa. This is a unique and lanamepa, anuttara. This motivation is under, this practice is anuttara, unsurpassed. There's no higher practice. What? Before you do anything, sit down and ask, why am I doing this? Then shoot your mind ahead to ride that motivation to the day of your death. Then see your loved ones on either side of you passing into that darkness. Consider how prepared are they. Try to feel what it would be like to abandon them at the moment. By the way, after that moment, you can't help them. When you pass that line, you're separate. You can't do anything for them. Okay? You can't, whatever you're gonna do, you gotta do it now while you can talk to them. There's no like magic ritual you can do and help them. Once they pass that line, and once you pass that line, you are separated. You won't know each other. You could live together in the next life for 80 years and you wouldn't know you had been together before. You won't recognize them again. So will you throw them into that? Will you leave them? People who you will never see again. You know, would you leave them like that? You know, just helpless. They die and they're helpless, right? He says, think about it. Take your mind there. Bring it back. Then start your yoga. Okay? Everything you do. Start a song. By the way, it makes the song much more beautiful. If all you cared about was the song, to go into a song thinking about your loved one's death and how you could help them, it makes the song so beautiful because then humanity is in the song. It's very beautiful. It's a good way to do anything. Even downhill skiing or something. You know, and like, no, if you just ran through that motivation and then took off, you know, the whole thing would be magical. You see? The whole trip down would be magical. Much different. Your whole life then is like magic. Driving down the southern is magical. Until you get to 60. All right. Kadam sanging. What does that mean? Kadam. Kadamba? Kadamba is, there's a modern Buddhist group called Kadamba who took their name from a Buddhist group that existed in Tibet 1,000 years ago. And they were like hippie yoga practitioners or something. They were like the first yoga practitioners in the US or something like that. They had small little centers. They never had more than 20 people in them. One of them would go to India and get diarrhea and come back. And they would bring some sweet little practice. And then they had collaborations going on. They'd say, oh, Mira, can you come over to South Tibet and teach the asanas that you learned? And we'll teach you the asanas that we learned on our trip to India. And then they were these cool little, they were like little yoga centers in South Tibet. They were called Kadamba. And they were extraordinary. Something happened beautiful in those days. I think it's sort of like early yoga here. I think it's the place that yoga's at now is kind of beautiful. There's a lot of small independent centers. The teachers are very inspiring. For a lot of us people, that's our inspiration for the week. You go to your yoga class on Saturday. The teacher gives a 5-minute talk before the class. That has replaced sermons in church, and the yoga has replaced the church, and it is inspiring, and it's beautiful, and the yoga is good. The yoga being done in this country or around the world right now is quite authentic. It's good. So then, you know, they had that going on when Buddhism was first coming into Tibet. It was cool. It was called Kadampa. Kadampa is a special name. It's a very beautiful name. Kadampa Sharwa. Say Kadampa Sharwa. Ka means any book, any piece of this book. Okay? Let's do it. You ready? You take any piece of this book. Okay? At random. You close your eyes. Turn it on. You point to a line. Right here. Then you read it. You ready? Here we go. And Nyamba Lai Yikin Shik Sub Duki, oh boy, this is weird. Chela Kupa Sikbe Joa Masune Atsama Miro Miro Samba Nakpa Dedang Dedang Ne Chu Nyamba Sum Rangre Gimba Becha Dang. Oh wow, okay. Joe Maris Jumbe Nakpa Shik Kongla Chimi Nyambala Yiken Shik Sotuki Chila Kupa Sikbe Joe Masene Atsam. I gotta get it straight, okay? Chuki Sep Dumputitan Dumba Joba Sikha. Oh, okay, alright. So he's talking about a saint named Lord Atisha, who we're going to learn about. He's on your cover. That black and white is Lord Atisha. And he came to Tibet when the Tibetans were still pretty crude in their practice. And he saw a lama mistreat a book. He saw him lick his fingers and turn the pages, right? And he didn't treat the book as if it was the thing that was going to save the world. He treated the book lightly. They say that when you understand that the instructions for saving the world can be written down, you would not step on a newspaper. And you would not let a newspaper touch the ground. Because it has the same letters on it. A newspaper contains the letters with which you can write the instructions to save the world. And that makes newspapers sacred. And you should not let them touch the ground. Okay? Because those letters could be used to describe how to save the world. Okay? That's okay? We just did ka. That's ka. Ka means holy writ. Okay? Dampa Sharwa means it seems like a message to you. Okay? It strikes you as a personal message. Okay? The Lama opens up the book at random and quotes a line, and then it seems like a personal message from God. That's Kad Dampa. Alright? That's the name of their group. The early yogis of Tibet were called Kad Dampa. They could be walking along a path and they could pick up Tibet has so many scriptures that you can walk along the road and you'll see little pieces of scripture. And you just pick it up and you read a few words and then, oh my God, you know, that's exactly what I needed to know right now. That's Kadampa. You have the karma for it to be immediately the Lord Buddha's word to you for the day. Kadampa Shora. Sar Ning means what? What's Sarpa and Ningbo? Old and new. Sarpa is old. So old Kadampas are the ones 1,000 years ago. The new Kadampas begin with Jetsun Kapa. Okay. The Galupa is therefore the new Kadampa. Okay. They were considered the new Kadampa. They turned it all back on. They got turned on again. It was just like the old days. Our lineage is called the Kadam Sarpa. And sometimes we're called Kadam Sarning. Okay? We stretch back 1,000 years to the beginning of Buddhism in Tibet. Okay? Kadam Sarning. By the way, I'm going to take a break soon, so have hope. Kadam Sarning Itembe. What was it Jenny said today? Hey, you're the guys that brought me so far. Don't yell at me, you brought me here. Okay. Tembe Kecha Lana Mepa Yin She Daki Daki Lama Rimboche Yang Ne Yang to Dampa Zepe. Turn back on, honey. Okay. Daki Lama Rinpoche Yangne Yangte Dampa Zepe Khe Tempe Tukur Tepa Namki Deta Lopa Tse Go So, Pabongkhwa Rinpoche is saying my Lama taught me that this practice was those of you who wish to take on the heavy burden of working for all living beings, you must master this practice. You must master this practice. What practice? Kunlong Chupa. Say Kunlong
Chupa.
Which is what? Just ask yourself why. Before you do anything, ask yourself why. And then let the mind go off to the end of your life. And then bring it back. Let it go off to the end of your life. Take your loved ones with you. Then bring it back. And then start whatever you're going to start. Okay? Then he says, my precious Lama told me this over and over again. Okay? He doesn't mention his Lama's name. I thought I would mention it for you. He just puts this huge mark in the text. Like, you know, he carved a mark into the text. You know. He was shy to say his Lama's holy name. But I'm not shy to say his holy name. It said, Dakpo Rinpoche Jambel Thundur. Say Dakpo
Rinpoche
Jambel
Thundur.
So that was Pabongkhwa Rinpoche's teacher. And he told Pabongkhwa Rinpoche, this is a unique practice of our lineage. Okay? To ask yourself why. Before anything. But he said this is a beautiful point, okay? There are special rituals in Tibet that are designed to lengthen the lives of the audience and the Lama. Okay? There's a ritual that we could do together that would lengthen our lives. Okay? Which is good if you want to help people. It's better if you can live longer. The longer you can live, the more people you can take care of. This is a good reason to do yoga. You know? If your body can keep running a little longer, if you get a little more mileage out of it, you can help more people. Right? He says, but if you were to take your mind through this kind of Kunlong Chupa just prior to a long life initiation, you would Dendel Chuk. Say Dendel?
Dendel.
Chuk. Dendel means what? Dependent origination. But it has a second meaning. It can mean auspicious, or what do you call it? Auspicious. Chuk means mess it up. So what's Tendel Chuk? If you're about to undertake a long life initiation, and then you shoot your mind ahead to the moment of your death, that would kind of screw it up, okay? He said it would screw up. All the energy of the ceremony would be destroyed, ruined. Okay, so he said you don't do the full thing under certain circumstances. You use your good sense. You know, don't take your mind to your death if you're praying for long life. Okay, you just get confused. All right, so except for special circumstances like that, ini riwo gendemba kadam sarpa. They should take their mind through this process. Why am I here? What are you doing here? What did you expect to get out of this teaching? Why did you come here? Why are you sitting there? Okay. What do you want? Okay. Don't want too little. Isn't there some rock and roll song like that? I forget. It's like, don't wish for too little. Okay? Like that. I don't know.
Put it on the wire.
Maybe. Why? Oh yeah, it is. Say the whole line. They said to me, don't ask for too much.
Yeah.
And then said to me, don't ask for too little. When you think of it, tell me. Yeah. Katie Lang did it recently. Okay. Deda Lobo Tsegu. I'm gonna keep, I don't know, I feel like tonight like we should go a little bit. Dear Kachepa Thale, Lale Ne Tana Kawa Sang Sang Tabu Yin Nyamlen Minda. Then he does a mean thing. He starts examining the motivation of each person in the class. He says, well, seems to me, some of the people who attended here tonight were thinking it would be good luck to hear the teaching, even though I could never practice it myself. Okay. I admit, it just seems like some of you came there for that. Lene ni kecha donam yang nga yang doshe yam yuk tabu onba yang yang. Seems like some of you just came because your friends came. Okay? Yam gyuk means following the crowd. Very rare word, but very beautiful word. Yam gyuk. Are you going tonight? It's very common in the monastery, okay? Like the guy next to in the cell next to you will come over and say, you're going to the ceremony tonight? And you say, I don't feel like it. He said, I'm not going either. And then somebody comes over, are you going to the ceremony tonight? Yes. Why are you going to the ceremony? Why are you going to go recite for 6 hours somebody's death ritual? He says, they're serving chapalet. Let's go. Chapalet is a flat fried momo. If you don't know what momo is, you won't appreciate chapalet anyway. It's a Tibetan hamburger. Okay. Really good. Okay, nyesen minjo. Then min shendan mindawa dishini when can tabo omba yamyo. Seems to me, he says, some of you came thinking I probably won't be able to put into practice that whole lam mim, but I'd like to, it'd be good luck if I heard it once. You know? And then others of you came here just because your friends came. Okay. Wen kian wang chen sok shen dang min dawa, di shuna tronjo che nyamba sok ni min jo. He says, the only lucky thing is I'm not teaching much tantra tonight. Why? Because then people think they'll definitely go because they'll have something to sell to other people. Okay. Oh, if I learn some secret stuff about the chakras and stuff, you know, I could get lots of students, you know. And, you know, he says, luckily, Lamrim is not very sexy. And it's not this big secret thing that, you know, you can put an ad up, a poster up that you know some secret practices that nobody else knows. He said, luckily that kind of motivation is not possible with this book because it's public knowledge. Okay? He's cheering them up. Okay, so Damien Wangchen Sok La Yina Di Shuna Lab Damba Soki. By the way, he says Trongchok. You could go to Trongchok. Trong means town. Trongkir means town. Chok means choga. What's choga? What's a choga? That's a chuga. What's a choga? Choga means a ritual, right? A vidi. A ritual, okay? So what's a trongchok? What's a town ritual? Town ritual means the monastery, which is always required to be, what do you call it? Gyangchak Nakya. Say Gyangchak Nakya. 500 fathoms from the nearest city. This is a fathom. Which is for truth, okay? For this is a true, and a true is 16 source, okay? So 16 source to a true, 4 truths to a dom, and dom lapya to a monastery has to be 500 arm spans out of town. Why did I say that? And then sometimes the monastery will get a request from a family in town saying, can you send 3 monks to recite a tantric text for our, what do you call it, ancestors' benefit. And then you go and you recite and they sit there politely. Sometimes they fall asleep. I did it a lot in Mongolian people. That's how I learned the diamond cutter, by the way, because it's very popular for Tongchong. They don't teach diamond cutter in the monastery, but you're required to recite it at Tongchong. So, you know, I got to read it over and over, because you got to recite it to get dinner, you know? So you go to the house, and they set up the altar, and all the family sits there, and then you start the diamond cutter. You start reciting the diamond cutter. You take like 5 monks with you. And that's supposed to help their ancestors. And then the grandmother falls asleep. And then the father falls asleep. Because they're not supposed to leave the room. And then the kids are like running around and breaking things and screaming. And you just keep going to the diamond cutter. Then at some point the reciter, the leader says, okay, look. You take 10 pages. You take 5. Let's speed this up. You know? And instead of reciting it together, everybody recites a different piece of it. And it's like chaos. It's like everyone's reciting a different chapter at the same time. So you can get through fast because they all fell asleep already and they won't know the difference. And then you finish and you stop ringing the bells and then they're all like, and then the father looks, checks the time, he looks at you, did you finish all the pages? And you're like, we finished all the pages. You know? And you did. But that's how I learned the Bible cutter. I think I'm the only person who might have read it while we were reading it. That's Tongchong. So some people come to a teaching hoping they'll have a new text to do the Tongchong. And they can tell the family, I have a Tongchong text that the other guys don't. I can recite Kadam Tigde Chuduk for you, and nobody else has it. It's really good for ancestors. Day Min Wang Chen Sok Lai Yin Di Shunang Ag Demba Soki Jaden Do It Nipayin. Or maybe you want to learn some of the higher tantras with which you can make rainfall. You could get lots of gigs that way. Okay. All right. Ne dun shiwa dun, you can heal the sick. Nor drup, you can make people rich. Wong du, you can get them promotions at work by doing tantric magic, right? He says, luckily I'm not teaching that tonight. Or the room would really be full. Okay, I'm just teaching plain old how to get to enlightenment. Gashiki ni tegya kang cheshi chete chela song song ki matsa tabu chela. Some people take teachings to be like, what do you call it? Inventory that they can sell. You know, like I'll have more stuff that I can sell. I can make posters for all kinds of teachings, and people will come and pay money. The more subjects I learn, the more posters I can make, and the more crowds I can get. That's all. Some people come to the teaching with that. Then they go back to their home states and they sell it. He says, luckily, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen tonight. Because I am teaching the book that everybody knows about. You can't get any mileage out of this book in Tibet. Everybody in Tibet knows about this book. Okay? Nagme. Dedagni chula tembe digbat sapchewa chesok bayinde. He said, if you want to collect really serious negative karma, the best way to do it is to, how do you say, is to debase the teachings by selling them. Okay. If you want to really make a nice, serious, bad karma, that's a great way to do it. To debase the teachings by treating them as commodities. So, Pyinde, Tumba Sangye Ki Tarpa Dan Tamje Kemba Drupe Tapsu Sumba Nam Tsende Dundu Kyer Wa. If you take practices that are meant to take you to the golden heights of enlightenment, and instead you use them as commodities to get popular in this life. Okay? to make people like you in this life, okay? Like a commodity. It's like a king is sitting on a throne, and you grab him and you strip off his robes, and you put him naked on the ground to wipe the dirt on the ground. You know, it's a beautiful image. Yeah. If any of the motivations I've mentioned has ever occurred in your mind as you approach these teachings, I beg you to discard them now. Okay? I beg you to discard them now. Janju sem chun sem chumat sun chekis sel legbar tapne semba shun. I ask you to listen with some concern for the benefit of your loved ones as they pass into that darkness and other beings. You know? At least think like that. Some kind of love for other people. Deku non chebekor songne mushi sembar jawe chuni. We reach the start of the teaching. Okay? Let's do a little more text. Is that okay? I had the whole iced tea. I'm up for it. This time of night is a good night to teach. I don't think you're not going to be up too late. I don't think so. Let's do like half an hour. It's okay.
Yeah.
All right. So he's about to start his actual teaching. He urged his listeners to ask themselves, "Why are you here?" And that's finished. Okay. Now we start the actual steps to enlightenment. Dela dambo nyasa nang de chokyo tumba sangye ki sung bandit nam ki shepa den la papa chupe wong chuk chambo nam ki gombe nyam tok tukyu nyam tok tukyu la tumba shigla nyam len ja gurki. He sets forth three things to look for when you're thinking about following a certain spiritual path, okay? So different people have come to you and suggested spiritual path to follow. And then he gives three suggestions for things you might want to look for in a spiritual path, in any spiritual path. Okay, here we go. Sangye kisum. It should have been first set forth by a being who was already enlightened, okay? Some kind of divine being. If you're going to practice something in the way that a river flows, you know, a river derives from snow mountain somewhere, you should look for an authentic source. It should have come from an enlightened being and not less. That tradition should have come from an enlightened being. Bandita nam ki shepa ten la papa. There's a process, okay, in this tradition, in the Buddhist tradition, which is interesting, okay? Lord Buddha lived 2,500 years ago. Lord Buddha lived for, he taught for 51 years after he became enlightened, okay? So we're lucky. Like in the Christian tradition, Lord Jesus taught for, I don't know, he taught for 2 years or? We have records of his teaching from the age of, I forget, 29 to 30. Something, I think, something like that. We have 50 pages of his own speech. The red print is maybe 30 pages. And based on 30 pages, millions of people have had high spiritual realizations over a course of 2,000 years. I mean, it's extraordinary. Okay, in Buddhism, we're lucky because Lord Buddha taught for 51 years, and we have out of thousands of teachings he gave, we still have complete records of 1,500 of them. Okay, so we have 100,000 pages of Lord Buddha's own teaching. Okay, so we're lucky in that way. But we have another tradition in Buddhism is that that teaching should be represented each generation. Okay? In each generation, someone who's well-trained or people who are well-trained should interpret that for their generation. Okay? You need someone to bring it to your own vernacular. You need someone to speak it in your own language and in your own times. Okay? What I'm saying tonight will sound outdated and badly outdated in 20 years or 30 years, okay? It won't be attractive to people in 20 to 30 years. It'll sound old-fashioned. The language will have changed. Different ideas will be popular. There will be different sensitivities. You know, to remain alive, to remain authentic, a tradition must be represented in each generation, or it's corrupted. Get it? If you just leave it in the old original book and you don't present it for your generation, that's a corruption. If you overinterpret it, you corrupt it also. Okay? So it's a very delicate process. Something about the way that Buddhism stresses adherence to your personal teacher's training and wishes has made it a very pure lineage. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. If you can read this book, which was spoken in 1921, you can read a sutra from 500 BC. No problem. They're the same. It's extraordinary. The lineage is extraordinarily pure and demanding. You cannot add stuff. You cannot take away stuff. You interpret it for your generation. But there's no change in the thinking for 2,500 years. It's pure. The lineage is, I can't describe to you. You can't imagine it, okay? The lineage is pure after 2,500 years. And you can read a newspaper. If you can read a newspaper, you can read this, and you can read a sutra that was spoken in 500 BC. Okay? And they're the same. And it's all the same. It's very, very beautiful. The process of each generation presenting it to their own people, right? To people of their own generation, has not resulted in a corruption of the teaching. It has resulted in a gradual clarification of the teaching. You see? It's a very, very beautiful thing. You see? If you want to know what the Buddha said, we go to this book, 1921. And that takes us to Kedutenpa Dargye, or you could say the first Panchen Lama, say 1600s. That takes you to Kedutenpa Dargye in the 1500s, which you studied on Monday. Okay? That takes you to Jetsun Kapa in the 1400s. That takes you to the Kadampas of the 1000. That takes you to Kamala Shila and Bala Viveka in the 800s. That takes you to Dharmakirti, Chandakirti in the 500s. That takes you to Gunaprabha in the 400s. That takes you to Vasubandhu and the Sangha in the 300s. That allows you to read Nagarjuna from the 200s. Then you can go into Ashvaghosha from the 100s, which might let you read Melinda Pinda from just before Christ, which would lead you back to Lord Buddha. And you would understand it perfectly. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful lineage. It's all so beautiful. You can't imagine how beautiful it is. So the process of succeeding generations of Indians and Tibetans and Chinese explaining it has only made it more beautiful. It has not become corrupted. It's very interesting. Time has not made these teachings corrupted. It has brightened them. Okay. Then there's this debate, like what, Lord Buddha wasn't clear enough? And they say, Nagarjuna says, look, if the moon shines on a whitewashed wall, Is it more what? It's just like, I can't explain it, and I can't explain to you how exciting it is or how beautiful it is, but each generation has made it more beautiful. And the teachings have become more accessible and more beautiful with each generation. And it hasn't stopped. It's for 2,500 years. Every 30 years, somebody comes and makes it more beautiful and more authentic and more accurate. It's amazing. Okay, so it's a lineage which was begun by an enlightened being, and it was interpreted by our immediate lineage by 47 generations, whose names we recite every 2 weeks. We recite the whole lineage. We know the whole lineage. And it's just more and more beautiful, more and more pure. You are 48. I'm 47. Okay? Like that. It's a beautiful thing. You will be 48. And your students will be 49. It's like that. And it gets more beautiful with each generation. Okay? So look for a tradition which has an authentic source, an enlightened source. And then look for a tradition which has been passed on responsibly and purely and accurately. Third, Drupe Wangchuk, Drupe Wangchuk, Chembo Namki, Gombe, Nyam Tok, Tukyula, Chumba Shigla, Nyam Nan Che Gu. And then look for a lineage where people have tried it and it worked. Like things, weird, cool things happen to them. Alright? It's nice, right? Look for a lineage which was begun by an enlightened being, has been passed down and made more brilliant each generation. And then see if people had cool things happen to them by doing it. Okay? Alright? And we have. Okay? It has been miraculous for many of us, for me and for many other people. It works. And we can attest to it. It's a miracle. What you are going to learn is miraculous, and it will make your life a miracle, like a happy miracle. Okay, your whole life, every day. Okay, weird things will happen to you. You will meet angels, and be taken under their wing. You know, it's like a dream. It's like what you always wanted in your spiritual path. You know. And it works. It really works. Okay? It's cool. That's what you're about to embark on. Shendu sangye ki ma sumba kedrup shen ki mi shepe mengak sap serwa chitsam gom kyang dhubi yon sangye ki kyang ma nyepa shen le dhubi shi om nyen yon. He makes a joke, okay? This is a monk joke, alright? Okay. If you don't want to practice something like this, then you go find you go find a teaching which was not spoken by an enlightened being. And you go find some supposedly previously undiscovered spiritual thing which no great yogi ever practiced before. Okay? And then you meditate on that a lot. Okay? And you will come to some new spiritual realizations, which no enlightened being has never ever encountered. Get it? Okay. And which no one has ever experienced before, among all the perfect enlightened beings who have come before. You know what I mean? Like that, he's being critical of. There were people that come and say, I found this under a rock, this is a new thing, this is better than what came before. You know, there were like that. Okay. Dena dambor nyamsen denje chula dakchin chekute. Then he goes off, this will be the last thing, okay? He goes off on something very important. He's going to say, look, your soul is a valuable thing, okay? Your spiritual real estate, what you expose your mind to and what you open up and expose your heart to is very, very grave decision. What are you going to open your heart to? What are you going to let inside of you to touch your spirit is a very grave decision. It should not be made easily. Okay? It's like getting married or something. Much more serious than getting married. What you decide to listen to is more dangerous than getting married. Okay? Okay? If you make a mistake. Like, don't just go listen to anything. Because what you, it's like television, you know, anything you expose your mind to, it stays in your subconscious for your whole life. Every detail of what you watch on TV or what you listen to or people you hang out with, all that stays with you your whole life. It stays in your subconscious. So he's saying be a little more discriminating about what you let into your soul, because it will affect you deeply. Okay, don't just do any practice someone talks about. You know, be a little bit more careful about who you let into your inner heart. Okay, chegate, Jay Sakyapandita. This following was spoken by Lord Sakyapandita, Kunga Gyantsen. Okay, it was 1200s. Tādāṁ nōbu lāsāpē chūṅsē tsāṁ kī nyō tōṅ lā kūṅ lā dīshīṁ tāgnē chā sēndī chāvā chūṅsē lā tātē bēpā chēpā tōṅ kē wā tēngi lēnēngi tāpē chūla rā lē kyaṁ chūṅdī kī kāsē shīṁ sāngēng kāngdōṁ mī chūpā kāngchē tē lā kūpā dzīṁ. So this is a famous quotation from a very great Sakya master from the 1200s. Okay. I think it's from his Leg Shape Denza. He wrote a book of sayings, very beautiful. People go out in the world to buy a horse or a gemstone. In this country, it would be a car. Okay. So okay, they go out to buy a car. People go out to buy a car. Kumla Ding, they ask everybody, you know. Somebody asked me yesterday, who was that? They said, I never bought a car in my life before. What should I buy? You go and you ask all your friends, what kind of car should I buy? Okay. Dark nature. And they read all the, what do you call it, consumer reports, and they ask all their friends. They take their time. It's a lot of money. Let's say a new car. Let's say $10,000, $20,000 car. And you're going to be making payments for 3 lifetimes. And then you ask people, you know you're going to be stuck with this car, you know? And you ask people, you know? You say, did you ever buy a Jetta? Did you ever have a problem with it? Do you think it's a good car to buy? You ask people, okay? This is a small thing which will not affect you any further than your last breath in this life. Okay? The effects of a decision to buy a car will go no further than your last breath in this life. Okay? We see people like they work really hard, they make a lot of effort, they ask everybody, they check online, they make price comparisons, they go shopping at different dealerships, they find friends who are mechanics to go along with them and check the car, right? And if you're going to spend a lot of money on a car, right? That's one lifetime. Whether or not you made a good decision, it's not going to affect you past your last breath in this life. But there are other decisions which will impact upon the way thousands of lifetimes progress. Okay? A few thousand lifetimes from here on are in the balance. Alright? There are other decisions we make in this lifetime which will affect thousands of lifetimes into the future. How the next few thousand lifetimes go depends on your spiritual life now. It depends on what you learn spiritually now will determine how the next few thousand lifetimes go. What spiritual teaching you decide to expose your mind to will have repercussions on thousands of lifetimes. Okay? Chidi ki kasation. But people treat it like the way that dogs in Tibet treat food. Okay? So I told you already, dogs in Tibet and India, it's a bad life. Okay? To be a dog in Tibet or India is not like being a dog here. Okay? In India, I was all shocked. You know, I went to India. You see a nice little... I was 20 years old. A puppy dog came down the road. I'm like, you know, whistling at him. And then some Indian runs up next to me and picks up a rock and tries to kill him. You know, he just tried to kill him right there, right then. Tried to kill this little dog. And I'm like, what are you doing, you know? It's a dog. You know, and that's how a dog lives in those countries. You see, you just throw rocks at them and you try to kill them. And then they can't find any food. They're wild. We have them in the monastery. We had packs of wild dogs in the monastery. You don't go out after night. And they roam and they try to find food. And they learn to eat excrement. They learn to eat human excrement. In the old days, in my monastery, the monks went out in the field and pooped. Came home, went to bed. Then the dog packs came out and ate it. And then they go into the forest at night. And that's how a dog lives in India and Tibet. And they don't ask questions. Okay? The dogs don't say, you know, if they find some poop, they don't, you know, they're not like, well, I'll get back to this one if I can find a better one. They eat it now and they fight over it. They have fierce fights. The dogs often have big pieces ripped out of their bodies. They have fierce fights over the feces, you know, because that's all the food they can find. And they don't ask questions. They see something, you grab it and you run. You eat it and you run. You know? So he says, Sakyapandita says, you know, as far as a car, you ask everybody. As far as the spiritual teaching you expose your mind to, you're like a dog with a piece of shit. You know, you just grab the first... Anybody comes into yoga class, says, I'm going to teach you some meditation. You're like, oh, yes, please, you know. You don't think... You're totally indiscriminate. You can't divide what's going to affect you for perhaps thousands of lifetimes from something that might save you and your family within a few years. You're not capable of discriminating between the two. You don't have any basis to discriminate between them. Sounds okay to me. Nobody walks out of a yoga class because the teacher said to do a kind of meditation that might harm them. Okay? Because they don't know any better. They don't know. If you go to a yoga class and they ask you to do asanas that hurt you, and you have experience, you say, okay, I'm not doing that asana. You know what I mean? But then they say, meditate on this, and everybody goes, okay. They just don't know any better. And then to ruin your shoulder is only a few years thing. To ruin your capacity for compassion or something like that, that's a big thing. Okay, that's a very serious thing. Okay? You can ruin your inner body the way you can ruin your outer body. Okay. Causation. Sangen kanduan michapar. They don't look at whether something is helpful or not. Kangje de la kupatsen. Whatever they run into, they think, oh, okay, I'll try that. You know? Okay. She sumbatar rangchak nam. He says rangchak. What's that? Guys like you and me. He's like putting himself in there, okay? He's a high incarnate lama. He's the incarnation of the personal lama to the emperor of China. Okay, and he's like, you know, schmucks like you and me, rangchaknam, tatabu nyotong chenan tache namdang mamba. By the way, we'll stop in 5 minutes, okay? Hang in there. People like you and me, we buy a car, we like worry, we sweat over it, we don't get any sleep. We're like, should I believe the Toyota thing or should I get the Honda? You know? Tuktam takwa shu. People in Tibet went to lamas to say, will you do a prediction of whether I should buy this horse or not? Okay. In America, it would be like, Geshe-la, can you look into the future and see if I should buy the Toyota or the... A certain guy named, whose name I won't mention, Michael Wick. Because he won't mind. He's a sweet guy. He used to come up to Ken Rinpoche and say, Ken Rinpoche, he said, yeah, what? And he said, this was Nancy, this is when you guys were buying apartments together. 30 years ago or something. I don't know. Whenever it was. 50 years ago. But I remember he came up to Rinpoche and he said, "Oh, Rinpoche, you know, should I buy this apartment or not? You know, can you do a prediction?" You know, and anyway, you know, this is about an apartment. You know, he's asking the highest Harampa Geshe of the 10,000 graduates of that year in Tibet to predict which apartment is better, rather than asking about his next life. You see? Okay, Fabishu. Shen Mambo Lang Di. You know, we ask a lot of other people. Dharkyan Dabur, even those of you who are really good monastics, okay? Would a monastic be worried about a car? No, they're not supposed to have any, they're not supposed to own anything. Okay. So he said, those of you who are really good monks, you know, in Tibet, it was different. I mean, they would come and feed you. They don't do that here. Okay, Tabar Tsuna. Jashit Nyona, we go out to buy a brick of tea. Okay? Tibetan monks drink a lot of tea because it keeps you awake and talks like this. Okay? Doktan, Jidan, Yiptan, Nendumartak. We check the color of the tea. It's a block. They come in blocks from China. Bricks. They come in bricks. We check the color. We heft it. We see if it has a good shape. We turn it over and over and we examine it, okay? Chu Shorwa. We see if any of the leaves have been damaged by water. The tea leaves, right? Shorwa Sokyun. Edo. Edo. Do you see Edo up there somewhere? Edo means, hey, is that... I wonder if it has any problems like that. Edo means, I wonder if it has any problems. Okay. Edo. Okay. Edo. Nentendita. We work hard on that. Shendaga ji. Do you think this is a good, we asked our friends, do you think I should buy this block of tea? Okay. Detawe. Nene. Ja porava kashe nyanbayin. If you screw up in the purchase of a brick of tea, what's the total loss? A few cups of tea. The total loss is a few cups of tea. Daitabu nekap ki tun chungse la denda takche chekyang. It would be like buying a car. What's something insignificant that we, I don't know, buying a new blouse or something. Teapot. A new lipstick.
Teapot.
What?
Teapot.
A new teapot.
Blender.
A what?
Blender.
A blender, an almond blender. Now you ask a lot of people. It's like $20. You're spending $20. And you ask a lot of people and you compare, you price compare, and you look up the consumer reports on the blender. Okay. Tirab Dengi Duma Dume Shitsa Nyamsa Langje Chulani Tachi Kangcha Nyamachipa. And then you approach spiritual teachings which will impact on your soul's progress for thousands of years. And you're like a dog with a piece of shit. You just grab what you can. You don't even think about it. You know, somebody says, "You want to meditate?" And then you're like, "Yeah, teach me that." You know, whatever the yoga teacher says, you just do it. You don't have any concept that it might really mess up your mind for a long time. Okay. Not in an evil way. It's not that they're trying to hurt you or something like that. They just don't know anything. They don't know any better. And they teach you something that's not helpful. I've been doing yoga classes, I don't know, 12 years now. You know, I've been going to hundreds and hundreds of classes. My first yoga teachers, David Leif, Sharon Gannon, and Ruth, Lady Ruth, the first thing they taught me was, you travel a lot, right, Geshe-la? I said, yeah. They said, everywhere you go, take a class. Just check on the internet and go to a class. And you will learn something. So I actually did what, I did it. And whenever we travel, we go to classes everywhere. We go everywhere. Every country we go to, we take classes. I've taken hundreds and hundreds of classes. from hundreds and hundreds of different teachers. That's what, I think Jenny's like one of the best that I've run into, and that's why she's here. That's why I asked her to come. I'd like, you find a jewel, you know? One out of 100, you find somebody really amazing, right? Mirrors like that. Then after, maybe after 5 or 6 years, you get to be good enough at taking classes that you know when someone's not teaching you well. And you get good enough to know when they're going to hurt you. You know? Like, after a while, you're not that way at the beginning. You walk into a class and you just do what they tell you to do, and you screw up your shoulder and you think, you know, you think there's something wrong with you. And then after taking a few hundred classes, you walk into a class, there's a guy who's 23 years old, and he tells you to do something, and you're like, no. You know, that could tear out my shoulder, and then I would be stuck with that shoulder for 20 years or 30 years, you know. David Swenson told me that. He said, I said, do you do these poses? He says, no, I wouldn't do those poses, because they could ruin your shoulder or your knees for your life. And I wouldn't do them. But you see, it takes a lot of experience to know when a class is dangerous because the teacher's inexperienced or not well trained. You're talking about your tendons and your bones. The same thing is true for meditation. Okay? The same. Somebody can mess up your mind and the way you meditate. Someone who teaches you a poor style of meditation can ruin your meditation for many years, okay? Guess who's an example? Michael Wick. Same guy, okay? And he won't mind if I tell you his story. He came to Howell, New Jersey in 1970. And someone taught him to meditate. And he got bad. They taught him the wrong thing. And he got a very serious... He was used to be a very strong, strapping, big guy in those days. And he did the meditation they taught him. And he got very bad vata condition. And he has never recovered. He's 60. He just retired, right? Is he 60? How old is he? Nancy, how old is he? He's 55? 65. Yeah, he never got over it. He's never recovered. You know? And that was 40 years ago. And he can't meditate. He can't meditate the way he'd like to, because he was trained wrongly. And then that kind of damage, it lasts a long time. So what he's saying is, be a little more careful about who you expose your spiritual real estate to. It is very sensitive property. It is easily damaged. Be careful what practices you choose to do. But the problem is, the paradox is, when you begin, you don't know. You know, I did my first few years of yoga with a crazy Ashtanga teacher. Not that Ashtanga is bad, but with someone who didn't know how to teach it. And I hurt myself over and over. And I never knew that it was that they were teaching me wrong, you know. So it's the same with meditation. And it's the same on the inside as it is with your bones. Got it? Okay. Chirab Dengi Dume Shitsa Nyamsamangri Chuk. You are talking about the ultimate purpose of many lifetimes damaged by an improper practice, okay? Che kanya mi chepa ki kase shindu kan che shiki chokpar chepa nang mu detar, I'm almost done, okay? Detar ten ne mi rung te chuk da tsirap tengi duma chuk dro. If you mess up on choosing which spiritual practice to follow, you mess up for many lifetimes. Okay. You should not submit yourself to a spiritual path unless you have examined its value and its methods ahead of time. Okay? That's all. I'm not saying this one is better or that one's better. Just check. Just learn to be more discriminating and careful about what you expose yourself to, your spirit to, your soul. Okay? Take more time. Then he's going to give us some guidelines about how to check. That's all. He's not trying to sell you his version. He wants you to just check more carefully before you practice something. Okay? Deta chepanna chene chanchu langi rimba dile chok tu gyorpa mette sangha ki sakye kyang lamim la ragle shing nam so sum gyu la ma kyepa ma sa la mula la la. That's too long. I think we'll rest there, okay? It's after 10. What he's going to talk about now is very beautiful. He's going to talk about Tantra. He's going to talk about the high secret teachings. Again, Tantra is not something where, what do you call it? Wild sex practices or cutting chicken heads off and drinking blood. Or no, there have been people said that and it's very, very, very wrong. It's like saying I went into a church and they were all getting drunk. But actually they were all having communion or something like that, you know, like they have no concept of what's going on. So we gave an example of Tantra. What was it? You went to the Paradise Cafe to do homework with... Yeah, you went to Paradise Cafe to do your homework with some other people. There was somebody you didn't know from Virginia. You were sitting with them talking about the homework questions, which Geshe Michael didn't finish for you tonight. But you can like go over your homework 3 again. You'll get a homework late tonight, like midnight, okay? So, she'll get it and she'll give it to you tomorrow, okay? Maybe by the end of yoga, how's that? So you can work on it tomorrow. So I'll do that. But we gave an example of Tantra. We said you're sitting in your homework group with your teaching assistant, and suddenly you decide that the person sitting next to you is the teacher of the first Dalai Lama, Tsongkhapa. Okay? You suddenly have a deep insight into the fact that the young lady from Virginia sitting next to you is Tsongkhapa, okay, is the teacher of the first Dalai Lama. You have this sudden flash of insight, true insight, that Tsongkhapa has disguised himself as a young lady from Virginia who's sitting next to you in the homework group, you know? And then you realize that the last 3 things she said saved your life. Something like that, okay? You realize that the last 3 things she said because she could read your mind and she knew everything that happened to you since you were born. Okay? Like that. To have an experience like that, right? A true experience. That's Tantra. Okay? That's real Tantra. And then they begin to, what do you call it? They begin to happen more often. Okay? It's like, what do you call it? It's a kind of opposite of paranoia. Paranoia, you think everybody's out to get you, right? In Tantra, you think everyone's out to get you enlightened or something. Like, all these people around you are angels and they're working on you. Okay? That's Tantra. That's really Tantra. Why did I bring that up? He said, look, a lot of people, they want to go straight to chakras, they want to go straight to emptiness, they want to go straight to Tantra, they want to go straight to like enlightened experiences in the Paradise Cafe. And he says, the foundational attitudes presented in the Lam Rim, compassion, simple kindness to others, simple courtesy to others, simply being diplomatic to other people, simply cleaning up after yourself in someone else's home. Very, very primitive kindnesses, right? Those are the foundation of Tantra. Okay? The most simple kindnesses that your mother taught you. You know, like, if you sleep at someone's house, make their bed. You know? Help them wash the dishes. Get up early, make them orange juice. You see what I mean? Like, just simple manners. Simple consideration. And the other attitudes of the Lamrim. Simple kindness to people around you. That's how you get to Tantra. Okay? He's about to say that. You know, you want to have mystical experiences? Wash the dishes. Okay? And he's not kidding. Okay? Got it? If you nod, you can go home. Okay? He's saying, you want to have high mystical experiences? Just be a nice... Dharma Mitra, did you ever go to his class? First he kills you for like an hour. And then he makes this joke that he tells over... is it a joke? I'm not sure. He says, now we'll begin the class. You know? He just killed you for an hour. And he's like, now we'll begin the class. And he's like... Then he kills you for another hour. And then he makes you sit down. And then he gives you the same old talk. And the end of the talk is always the same thing. So be nice to people. That's like the deepest tantric thing he can say. You know, be nice to... When you leave here today, please be nice to people. Okay? And what he's going to say in this Lamrim is that simple kindness and consideration to others is the foundation of tantric experiences. Okay? Cool? All right. So we'll do more tomorrow. And again, we're starting a little bit late at 3:30. Maybe everybody should have a huge Thai iced tea before. You could keep up with me. All right. Okay. Whose turn was it? Jeff Hedy.
Sashi.
Good night. See you in the morning.